I had a big digital project in the works, and 3 years ago, and 2 weeks, something like that, Steve Jobs announced the magical iPad. And I thought, this is what I've been looking for. The project I have in mind is going, it's still developing. I'm not ready for the iPad. It's not ready for my project, but it will develop in parallel, in tandem with my project. And I think that happened. And so, in another direction, I talked to Mary Sherman about it a year ago, last summer, I think. She told me about a remarkable poem she had written. It's a book-length poem called Graffiti Calculus. And I won't by any means do it justice, but I hope that I can at least incite your curiosity. A mother notices that her teenage son, high school, they live in Washington in a quite nice area. This teenage son is sneaking out at night. There are empty liquor bottles in the bushes around the door. What is this boy up to? Well, what he's up to is, among other things, graffiti. And the mother learns his tag and follows him around Washington and follows him back to Kilroy, back to Odysseus, back to the caves. Well, there was a mother and there was a son. And the mother gave the son a copy of the poem, wondering, because the son had not only made his way forward, but had become a graphic artist. And the son, in return, gave the mother a typed and bound copy of the manuscript.
For her 60th birthday. No. So.
So I was shown this remarkable thing. And I said, you know, I'm reviving my little publishing company, Archipelago Publishers. And we might do something. I'm interested in doing digital publishing. Well, the short of it was, I'm not understating here, and I'm not flattering either, the privilege of producing a chapbook from Graffiti Calculus called Cave Boy. Cave Boy is a young boy coming of age, trained by his mother for the hunt. He hunts, he kills a doe, he's blooded. That night a girl comes to him. And then he and his teenage cohort go on a walkabout of a sort, a ramble, and he comes to a cave and he goes in and he makes art, but the cave is haunted by his mother's totem, cave bear. So that's this remarkable chapbook. It's more than a chapbook. It's a poem in 23 verses.
Yeah.
Right. And so here is the iPad. Here is the remarkable application, free from Apple, called iBooks Author, meant for authoring textbooks, but if you have this and it's free from Apple and you want to work with it, you push it. You push it and you can do marvelous things with it. And so I had a delightful summer of figuring things out. So the son, Colin Willis, is a photographer of remarkable accomplishment isn't even the right word, of this enormous energy. And Colin, we decided, would make the artist's book edition. I would do the iPad, Colin would do the artist's book. What did Colin have in mind? Colin lived in Oakland. We didn't know what Colin had in mind. So here was I extracting photographs from his website and putting together an iPad edition. And here is Colin out in Oakland. Every so often you could get in touch with him. And he was coming up with something that turned out to be stunning. And so so that's, you could say, a bit of background. In September, we published the iPad edition on, I published the iPad edition on iTunes, and they took it. That is to say, they check for whether or not it technically works. It all worked. Holy cow, it worked. There it was. It was up online. You could get it. And people have gotten it. And then came the artist book. And so at Artist Proof Editions, our first title is Caveboy into Editions. And so may I introduce to you Mary Sherman Willis, who is a poet, no adjective needed, and who also teaches at George Washington University. But here is the poet, and let her talk more about the larger event.
Well, thank you, Catherine. This is one of those wonderful, I've been working on this for a while, and looking for a publisher for the larger book, The Graffiti Calculus, and finally someone took it about a year ago, and said it would be available, it would be released in November of 2013, so there was this incredible lead time to it. I'd written it as a book-length poem, so I really hadn't tried to get individual parts published because, it's hard to untangle, to detach a thing out of context. Mm-hmm. So, but I had all this time, and I thought, well, why not get part of it published? And Catherine and I had a conversation, and it really just all fell into place. And the idea was to try and push, the publishing is going through an enormous upheaval now. I know everybody's been, who's been thinking about writing is thinking about how am I going, what form is this going to take? And what form is it going to take that allows me to, to have control of it, but still get it out? There's a whole self-publishing option, which is perfectly acceptable, but not so great if you're in academics or, if you really want to push, you want to work with a good editor, you really want to deal with a publishing house. So Graffiti Calculus was sort of put on the side for a moment while we took apart two sections of the six sections of that book and cobbled it together. Catherine read it very, very closely. We showed it to a couple of other people. We got very good sort of editorial advice as we were figuring out what form it was going to take. Catherine had her attachment to Apple. She's very much, design.
Well, because they made things possible. Yeah, they made things possible.
So it was going to be, it wasn't going to be Kindle. It wasn't going to be a facsimile of a book. It was going to be its own book, and whatever that means now. And here we had an opportunity to make it more than just an electronic book where you could turn the pages, but also have, say, audio of the author reading, have animation, have, you could have video links, you could have all kinds of extra added things. And we sort of explored other bookstores to see how other small publishers are dealing with this, and other small publishers are publishing their small books with little QR codes in the back, and you put your iPhone or your iPad up to it, and suddenly you've got links to, the story of the author or other, for instance, Melville House in Brooklyn is doing a series of novella releases, and they tend to go for, public domain stuff because it's cheaper. So I picked up Baudelaire's wrote a novella, who knew? Mm-hmm. And it in the back. Mm-hmm. So it's beautifully published. It's a very nice little format, beautiful, very simple cover that's coherent with the other books of the series. And then the QR code takes you to Daumier's article on Baudelaire, or Baudelaire's photograph, or Baudelaire's history. So you have all this added material. The possibilities now are very exciting for bringing together digital and traditional publishing, and at the same time, these young publishers who are exploring these new ways of doing it are very attached to the old way of making books. Mm-hmm. So especially typing. Brooklyn, but Oakland is another hotbed for this. Mm-hmm. So there are hundreds of these little letterpress operations that mm-hmm. are developing alternative ways to not only go back to the hand-sewn art book, but also add other things. The limits are evaporating. So my son Colin, who has a degree in graphic design, is in California and has rediscovered the book. It's something he's really attached to. He was an early reader, he was reading at 2.5, and then he just forgot how to do it. It was just not interesting anymore, and he became really interested in sort of the handwritten mark and the gesture of the handwritten mark and the mm-hmm. persona that he developed through his tag, and just this whole idea of sort of street art was really interesting to him. But once he didn't have his mother breathing down his neck, making him read, he started to read and really started to get interested in making books. So in Oakland, he's been making zines, which are little handmade, you know, in my generation, little mimeograph things that you would have
stapled. As they handed out on the streets of San Francisco, remember that? The mimeograph thing stapled together so somebody with hair would hand this
but
to you.
Now he does it. You know, he brings to bear all the technology that he has access to, which is computer stuff. But he hates to sit in front of a computer. He's done that all his life. And for his generation, they are really interested in the typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, as I said, telling Catherine, it's like a quaint hand tool for him.
Mm-hmm.
And for a graphic designer, particularly somebody interested in layout, it gives you the flexibility to move words around a physical page in a way that the computer doesn't really.
Mm-hmm.
It looks handmade. So he laid this book out on a typewriter, and he said, "Mom, I E.E. Cummings did it for you." You can see. I'll pass this around.
Mm-hmm.
As Catherine said, scored.
He scored for the voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, he scored for the voice. I love it.
Yeah.
So it's actually hard to read, but it slows. It actually affects your pacing, and that's one of the things I discovered. I've given my work to two different people, and we've collaborated in each of them using their own favorite technology to make two separate works of collaboration that are very different. And we'll show you the iPad version. You'll see this has got got a rough textured feeling to it. And he's illustrated it, and he did that. He was nervous about illustrating it.
It's not even illustrated. It's sort of more than that. He responded and added, enlarged.
Well, one of the themes in the book is the wall. I mean, through all of it, I'm really interested mm-hmm. in the idea of the wall as an object, but also as the thing that art goes up on, and then what's the effect that art has on a wall, which is that it permeates it.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. this teenage tagger, and this is all based on research. You know, I really researched this hard and read a lot about cave art, and there are many different theories, but they basically break down into two schools, and one of them is cave art was done as a shamanistic practice because you go into these caves, they're very dangerous and they're pitch black. Mm. And you start to hallucinate, as you would. It's sensory deprivation. Mm. You're hearing things and seeing things, and you're adrenalized. So, of course, it would be a religious experience for somebody to go in there. You've had this sense of powers that are greater than you, and there's a little bit of evidence that these were used as religious practices. There's a cave in several caves in Spain that have cave bear skulls arranged in a certain in an array and in a circle and up on an altar, and so that's a possibility. But my opinion about that is we are projecting. We have no way of knowing. We have our own culture, and we project onto this evidence what we think, and that's not rational thinking. We shouldn't be thinking that way. So the other school is to look at the handprints and the footprints that were left behind. And these are in caves all through Europe. And those are really the caves that people talk about, partly because they exist, and also because the research is there, and that's where Homo sapiens sort of settled in with Neanderthal people and really started to develop art as we know it. Over 40,000 years. The same art. Over and over again for 40,000 years by bands of people who really didn't have any contact with each other. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of incredible. But they all left prints, and this is, this was also done in Australia and South America, and the prints were either, they dipped their hands into a liquid ochres of some kind and then just pressed them, so you made a print, or they chewed the ochre in their mouths and then spat it. And made stencils. Anyway, when I heard that, and I was thinking about spray painted graffiti. And I thought, of course, that's what they were doing. That's so. Mm-hmm. So the theory is the hands were of a certain size, a certain height from the ground. The footprints, of which some remain still, are a certain size. And scientists can extrapolate from that what the size and the age of the people and the gender of the people were who made these things. And the consensus is teenage boys.
If the life expectancy was, say, 23... Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a little older than that, but they were our size because they ate meat. Yeah. And humans didn't really start shrinking until we went agricultural and relied on grain, which is we didn't evolve to eat that stuff well. So they shrank. At any rate, it's also that at a certain time in your physical development when your frontal lobe is not fully developed, so your impulse control is not. So really only teenage boys would be crazy enough to go deep into caves.
Because there are caves in which cave bears, which are now extinct, lived for 20,000 continuous years. Can you imagine this?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And they didn't hibernate, and they didn't live out there in the summertime because it was freezing cold.
That's where they were.
They were coming in and out all the time, and there were saber-toothed tigers. And it was just a crazy thing. Nobody lived in those caves. There's no evidence of living.
Mm-hmm.
There's some smudge marks on the ceilings of the caves that show that people were holding flaring lamps, but. So then I thought, well, then I've got to make a character and have him be a teenage boy. And of course I assume that this is a matriarchal society because they had to
work.
Because only the mother really knew who was the parent.
Child was. Yeah.
And so that's the poem sort of came from that, and it came from other research that I did on evolutionary psychology and perception, which also argues that our neuroperceptive system evolved while we were hunter-gatherers. So our attention to detail, what catches our eye, is what evolved when we were hunters. And and it's that creates the attention that we have to pattern and to difference that makes art.
It also makes hunters.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's that hunter-gatherer wiring that we have that many people argue leads to what we do about art. So it's what we notice, that what's important to us, and then we want to reproduce it somehow and hold it still. And so those animals that were, and most of the cave art is, and calling it art again is a projection, but most of those objects, those images, are prey animals. Represented in profile so that you could see the part that you want to hit, So and some people have argued that they were actually diagrams saying shoot here.
But there's also that one that's a mobile.
Yeah.
There's a
French paleoanthropologist or paleoarchaeologist who noticed that there were some images of horses, looked like false starts with a leg going here, and then it goes there. But if you move a torch across it, and the shadow,
it's the animal moving,
it's the herd running.
Well, it's actually animated.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah. It's like the herd running.
Animated.
So for them to go into a cave like that with this very unreliable light source must have been going like to the movies or something, or to the theater,
or here's another analogy that occurs to me. Notre Dame Cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
I was once there at Christmas Mass, and it was all illuminated for French TV, right? And you can see into the upper reaches, and you realize that in the medieval ages, they couldn't have seen that extraordinary roof, but it was made nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of that. So that's generally the gist of this. Yeah. It was sort of what's in the book. And so that's what Colin was responding to, the idea of the permeable wall, the idea of the pattern and breaking of pattern.
And Colin was the boy.
And Colin, he was the
You offered it up to him and he was instantly responsive?
Absolutely.
Was he?
He said, I'm always looking for writers.
Well, perhaps he was instantly responsive, but he laid low until he gave you that.
Well, Colin is... For those of us who know him and love him, sort of the way he is.
Yeah.
Um, And so he came. I thought it was going to be a zine that he would come up with, but instead, he actually made the book, you know, from scratch. So, so he made the pages and they sewed the signatures together. And those of you who, you know, go to VABC and know how to make books, I didn't actually know
this
how to make a book after all these years.
I will say they gasped when they saw this at VABC.
And then, you know, and he made the end pages and signed them.
Yeah, some of the reading copies are...
we've a little bit... I broke this one, but... I'll fix it.
Yeah. Afterward, the broken ones are for sale for twice the price.
So now that I've described the... Yeah. And does anybody have any questions? Yes. No?
I'll wait.
Okay.
Because we have more to show you.
So Catherine, meanwhile... was toiling away in the vineyards of her,
virtual vineyards, getting drunk every day
and learning how and putting together the book as a digital book. Mm-hmm. So you should talk about that,
right? Which was an interesting project because you know you're feeling around, except not just on the keyboard. You're feeling in your mind. What do you have here? All right. Well, you have this extraordinary poem and. Is Colin going to do the version? Sure, he says. Well, no, he's not going to do it. But what imagery? What do we have to go with? Wait a minute. What is this about a trailer? Because with iBooks Author, which is an absolutely marvelous application, you can start, you can drop a movie in at the beginning, you can do sound files, you can do galleries, you can do text, you can do interlinks, you can do links to the web. There are different templates. And what I really liked about it was the pages are not fluid. And fluid responsive pages are not good for poetry.
You should explain what that means.
Mm-hmm. It changes with the direction you're holding the thing, landscape or portrait,
right,
as they say.
Right.
Or and the other thing about the iBooks Author is it's only available on the iPad. That wasn't a difficulty for me because this was in various ways the most advanced multimedia book application available for free that you could get. A little footnote: you can if you're
So in other words, if you had a Kindle. Or no,
it's not
you
on
could
Kindle.
Not get it.
No,
then
and
you
not
can't
only
read
that,
it on your iPhone or on the computer.
That's
it
right.
It won't.
It's only on iPad, mm-hmm. And also Kindle is black and white unless you get the new flashy one. But we had color. I wanted the voice, mm-hmm. and this is the other thing, and this is absolutely essential. You start with an exceptional text, and you don't go away from the text. You respond to it. But this is the thing. It's the center, at least for me as a publisher, it's the center of everything I've done is the text. And so what do you do with this text? And what happened was there was a kind of collaboration. It was a kind of dialogue I found with what iBooks Author offered, and that was in the first incarnation. And then, all right, so we have this, we have the text. How can we make them look? All right, they look pretty good. But anyway, at some point it occurred to me, so Mary Sherman had read some of the poems, recorded them on her iPhone. So we had some audio files. So I slotted some in just to see what this would be like. Mm-hmm. And then I built some animations on Keynote with her voice and... Oh, we can make something interesting happen here. And we're thinking about a trailer, as it's called, an opening animation. All right, what do we want to do with this? We want the poet's voice. Well, her voice is so warm. I mean, it's a wonderful voice. What do we want to do? Well, wait, this iPhone, it's not good enough. So she recorded each poem with a marvelous young sound man who's done some more work for me. I mean, he's very good. So we have sound files each poem, and we don't want illustrations, but how am I going to make this visible? Well, here, Colin has this website full of weird and interesting stuff. And it turns out, and on his Facebook page, he has loads of photographs. And they're astonishing. So I'm pulling things off, feeling like a thief, because Colin doesn't respond to email. But I figure we're all right. And pulling things down and... right. Anyway, and this is, I think, the important moment for me. I realized, wait, this is a performance. This is a performance. And I don't want this. We don't want the poet telling us the background. We don't want to break the performance. All right, so we'll have this this introduction. And then we'll move into the poems.
So you should show.
Performance of the poems. And so I'll do that, but let's coordinate these and we can pass around the iPad so everybody can see the opening animation at once.
So how do you want to do this?
Go
I'm at
here. Do you want me to set it up?
I'm at the same place.
Okay, so we'll go 1, 2, 3 and point these in various directions.
And what are we
hitting? You touch the very first.
The dot.
Yeah, it's the first dot.
Okay.
So. 1, 2, 3. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is what.
Well, when you said three, I hit.
Whoops. Wrong dot.
No, the dot. Done. The dot didn't do anything.
There we go.
The first dot.
I looked it up on that.
There. Okay.
Yeah, and she uses it too. It's because it's so it's a trailer.
Oh yeah,
it's
not showing. Wait a minute.
No, it's right.
There we go.
Mine's already going.
And it's very straight. You know, it's just two images, and she sort of fades from one to the other, and then
there we go.
And wrote a little
you have one.
That sort of acts like jacket copy.
Oh, that's yours.
So it's jacket copy trailer.
Yeah.
You know.
And is that the same font that's used throughout?
I think so.
I think it's Palatino. I went really basic with it, you know, because...
Well, but
it works.
But to me, it works. And
yeah, but the other thing is that depending, it might load on every iPad. So this is web safe as a
completely.
I shouldn't be
very, very
to careful about it.
Right. But is it going around?
Yeah, it's going.
Are you familiar with Michael Harder?
No.
The founder of the Foundation for Shamanic Studies.
No kidding.
And he has a new book coming out in April.
It's called Got to.
Yeah.
Right, so it's 58 seconds.
Yeah. The trailer goes to. I mean, there are people who really just start.
Right, that's the opening. And you can see it on Facebook too. Right, so then we get to this next page. And again, Colin's photographs, which this one I call the Motherwell photo. You'll recognize, right? And the way it's set up is you can touch here and go to the colophon, or if you know the way, the architecture of this is more than a little complicated, but let's go to.
So that's the cover.
That's the inside cover. That's the title page.
Cool.
And again, Colin's photo. Colin and his friends. Having fun in the park. On their way with their torches to the cave, no doubt. Right. And then we go, here's, what's that? That's the, that's a copyright page. Here are the epigraphs. May I read the epigraphs? The first is from Ortega y Gasset, his Meditations on Hunting. When one is hunting, the air has another more exquisite feel as it glides over the skin or enters the lungs. The hunter feels tied through the earth to the animal he pursues, whether the animal is in view, hidden, or absent. Mm-hmm. And then here is from a paleoanthropologist called Dale Guthrie, The Nature of Paleolithic Art, who says, "The biometrics of hand and footprints show that it was predominantly Paleolithic young people who ventured back in deep caves and left their marks." So
cool.
And then you go to this page, which is the contents, and I've set it up so that you can touch. Here we go. Yeah, right. Touch on each title, and it will go to the page. Every verse is 14 lines, so 2 pages. So there we are. That's the first page. The poems don't have titles, but
That's the first page, and then the second. And so, may I show you what I think is the wonder of this? We'll have a reading.
So you tap, and then I saw the instructions.
Brings us to green the wall is our shepherd, and leads us, brings us to green pastures, and leads us to still waters.
Before
men made the cave, when wooded gullies fingered open savannas, veined by networks of game trails. When people were kept on the move by the lumbering mammoth, the tiger's cat tang, the yipping wolf. Isolated bands of men with spears, women with carry baskets, sifted through dappled shadows. Children idling alongside, toddlers riding their uncle's shoulders, babies rolled and slung in pelts. On frozen plains, herds of ibex or bison or shaggy, stiff-maned horses were driven like dry leaves in a steppe wind. A thin orthography of clouds in the blue above them. Hunter and hunted.
And on the wall is a shadow of one of Colin's drawings, which is the skull of a cave bear mixed with the skull of a Paleolithic human. And so there are 23 poems in this.
Okay, Catherine?
Yes.
Very cool.
In the book, we have the special effects orthography.
Yes.
But not on screen.
No, it's a different edition.
How did you write it originally, Mary?
That's exactly how I wrote it.
How?
You mean, how did I write the
poem? She had the poem existed long before these editions did.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
you didn't write
like...
No,
words written as in shapes.
No. I mean, I just wrote it on a typewriter. I mean,
you
on a
just
computer.
Wrote it. Okay, so
yeah.
All of this is Colin's.
This is a collaboration. So what we, you know, so this
we
is,
had her text
yeah.
to work from.
Mm-hmm.
Her text was
just straight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
But Colin's. This is
that's
yours.
His interpretation
yes.
of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And
good
your
job, Colin.
And my
yours,
this is
yours,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So what we did was respond with what we had available to us.
Yeah.
So there are 23 poems. 13 in the first section and 10 in the second. So here's the introduction to the second.
So Colin's images aren't in this. Because
they are, but differently. The photographs are Colin, but they're different than in the... On the other hand, when I made the animations of the poems, often in the background I would put some of his drawings that you can, when you look at it closely, you can see them, and one of them it actually comes up,
yeah.
you know, out of
it's
the animation.
Slow, it's a very gentle reveal. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's very
right.
Cool.
Right. And then this is the last part, the colophon page. I love this picture, and so I had to use it again, as I did in the animation. I mean, again, Colin's remarkable
yeah.
photographs.
Dirty lens is really what it was.
Yeah, it looks great.
Maybe,
mistakes
but,
are the best
but then
in the
here,
world.
Of course, you can link to... right. You can link then to the web. I don't know if you...
Huh.
I don't. Do I have web? I don't. But anyway, if I had Wi-Fi, this you could go from Mary Sherman's page. I'm Mary Sherman's line. To her website, and the
right.
same with Collins.
So that's him. That's
right.
The,
that's Colin.
That's the cave boy.
And if you look closely at that photo
cave.
Of the cave boy, you might see the same little tilted nose. At least that's
wait,
what,
wait,
that's
see.
What I think. There's
well,
there's
nice.
The artist. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so that's our offering. This is on iTunes. You can go. You can Google Willis Cave Boy.
Only if you have an iPad.
Only if I have an
Well, but you
yeah,
go to the iTunes store. Yeah, go to the iTunes store and then just do Cave Boy and then you can download
if
it.
If you have an
iPad.
iPad, yes. And
iPad Mini, does it work on that?
It will, yes, and it works.
Really?
I checked. I was in the Apple store in Grand Central, and I wanted to see the Mini, and that's the first thing I checked. And I'm very much impressed. I want to think. The young woman who was demonstrating this to me was very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, yeah, it's very nice on the Mini. And, in fact, this screen is the same as on the Mini. So it's even better if that's possible on the Retina screen, but the Mini screen also... That's fine. Yeah, yes.
Exactly.
So we should ask more questions.
Yes. So that's what I think we have to offer. And so shall we open ourselves to questions and comments and slingbacks and slingbacks?
How is this going to affect your work? And does this give you ideas about things you might want to try?
How much of a letdown is the big book?
Oh, yeah. Big book's just an ordinary perfect bound soft cover.
The big book is a great book.
Who's publishing that?
It's called CW Books from Ohio.
How long is this text in pages? Is it a normal book?
No, this one is,
graffiti
not
calculus.
This one, but Graffiti.
Graffiti Calculus. Oh, it's about 75 pages.
Right.
Yes, it's a typical full-length book of poems.
Right.
But it's one poem.
It's one poem.
So there's nothing typical about a 75-page poem.
It's a poem you could say in verses.
Yeah, it's a poem in verses. And, you know, and I broke it down. I wanted to, you know, just like I noticed a tagger makes the same shape over and over again, but there's always a slight difference. So I wanted to have one standard form, sort of the form, which is a kind of a very bastardized sonnet. It's a 14-line, 7-coupleted thing, and with long and short lines, and that was going to be my tag all the way through. But, so otherwise, so that's how it goes. That's that's the way the poem looks.
So on the iPad, you know how you can adjust the scale?
No, you can't.
No.
But you can disable that. So that your format is always
the format. No, it's not even an option in iBooks Author. It is.
Oh, in iBooks Author.
That's the fluidity thing.
Okay. I see.
Yeah.
And also
so this
is,
and also I disabled portrait because it didn't work with this at all.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So
right. So this is only landscape, and you can't adjust the size of the type. But what you can do is open the animations and so on.
Mm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have a question, Sid?
I'd like to know how you advertise the book.
Advertising it, that's really good point.
Yes, right. The part that the absolute responsibility of the publisher and the part where this publisher falls down. I think I was spoiled by Archipelago and how at the end we had 18,000 readers a month, individual, what do they call it?
Hits or something. Mm-hmm.
No, it's not hits.
Unique.
It's
unique
many
visitors.
Unique visitors, right. What I thought was the word would go out, but I was so concentrated, I was so attentive to the making that the publicizing, we started with Facebook. And so that's where the initial word spread. And then Mary Sherman, when the art book came out, the artist book came out, Mary Sherman had friends in Washington who owned a superb gallery, so the launch of the art book was at a gallery in Washington, and she had standing room only, and half the edition sold out that night.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah. Because it turned out not to be a zine. It turns out to be a serious
really
artist
long.
Book.
How many are there in the edition?
It's only 100, which is...
Right.
But this is not a bad model, actually. We stumbled on it, but it's actually worked out pretty well. It can almost pace for itself, which I'll never make any money on the ordinary book.
More
traditional.
But also a first book is a calling card, as far as that goes.
Yeah. And also,
but
this is
there's variations.
The first iteration. Yeah.
We're doing an event at the book festival at the VABC, and we love them, and they love us, as it turns out, too. I'm going to print a broadside of one of the poems, I hope using one of Colin's pages. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a broadside. That's another iteration. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the possibility of doing a soft cover of this, you know, as a not an artist book, but a reproduction, you know, at a less expensive rate. And so we'd have that, and it could probably be available then through Amazon. This one is we're hand selling, so it's show and tell, right? They want us to call it a multi-touch book, the iTunes book. Is on the U.S., Canadian, Great Britain, Irish, and Australian bookstores. And this one is here. The iPad edition is $8, and the artist book is $60.
Mm-hmm.
And
That is a very reasonable price for an artist book. And in addition,
I agree. Put your price up, double it.
And in addition,
well, actually, what's going to be doubled is there are books that are errors, kind of like upside down stamps. There are about 5 or 8 of these copies. Yeah. At the end, when the edition sells out, those will be for sale for double the price.
Says the publisher.
That's right. We're not fooling around.
So
there.
Colin wouldn't think of doing a second edition of this.
Yeah, he would. He would.
We're not there. Because actually, you can't do a second edition of it. I mean, it's a signed numbered edition. It would be a different. It would be a different event.
Yeah.
It would be a different. And there's no reason to do that. But if we did a soft cover version, it would probably be another edition with a different cover, and it would have another ISBN. And
again, the technology makes it possible now for small publishers to do very limited runs.
And of course, what we think of now is what they call versioning.
Right. Electronically?
Print cases, a soft cover version of this.
But this is interesting too, because it's just
it goes
out there.
Right. And actually, I've had very interesting response to this, not only for the glory of this edition, but writers, poets, and performers, not in large numbers yet, thank heaven, coming and saying, well, look, here's an idea. Do you want to think about this? And so I'm talking with a poet whom I published in the final edition of Archipelago, who also is a translator from Russian. And she's working with a poet in Russia. They're of an age, 50-ish. The poet is apparently extremely well-known. extremely well-known, well-regarded in Russia, but not known in the West, and wants to be known in the West. But there are some YouTube videos of her. So the poet said, would you like to think of a bilingual, bi-audial edition? And yes, I would. And so she said, though,
it's so easy.
The thing of it is, of course, the Russian poet is, as she says, illiterate in new media, barely even emails. So we'll see what happens there. But there are videos of her reading. It's not impossible to think, and one has connections in Moscow. It's possible to think of fine quality audio being made, and I think it's a thrilling way to produce, because the iBooks author is for free. You can push it as far as it'll go. I mean, really gorgeous stuff is being done by presses with great resources. Touch Press is insuperable. They did Eliot's The Wasteland. They did The Elements. They did The Orchestra. I mean, they're superb, and they did all the right things. You can't top them. But what you can do is sort of go underneath and to the side, into the unoccupied territory. And what I like about iBooks Author is you can master it. I mean, you have to have the time and the whatever else, right? The grit, the idiocy.
The brains.
Yeah, you have to be willing, you know, you put seat in chair. But you can do things with it. And in fact, you can't even afford to pay for this because you have to do it. But if you like doing it and you have other kinds of audio and visual and textual resources, you can make really interesting things. And just a footnote about working with Apple. It turns out to be very easy. You fill out the forms, they contact your bank, you give them an IRS number, etc. It's all fine. All the standard setup. If your multi-touch book, as they call it, your iPad book, and this is not EPUB, it's through the iBooks author, so it's a multi-touch book. If it's for sale, it can only be sold on the iTunes bookstore. Apple takes a third, you get 2/3. That's about as good a deal as anybody will ever get. It's better than if you're doing a print edition. And there, you know, they every month, you know, a certain amount, if there is a certain amount, is deposited in your bank account. So that's that. If it's not
going to send your kids to school.
But no. We don't know yet. It's not an issue for us, but who knows. But what I also want to say is if it's to be distributed, and the project I'm working on now is not going to be for sale, you can distribute it as you wish from your website, from other sources. So it's flexible, and Apple doesn't own your content. It only owns the format, which is not an unheard of thing. So that if you want to do something with the same content, you can reformat and publish it on Kindle. That's of no interest to me with this, because I think we have a spectacular a combination with the audios and the visuals, and then this great text. And again, I don't even want to say great text. The text, the poem is the poem. Right. And so we can make that manifest with this, and to me, that's the part that's a great thing to do. It wouldn't be fun in black and white for the Kindle, no.
I think I've listened to a lot of audiobooks, but the difference between doing that and listening to Mary Sherman's voice as you're looking at the
poem.
Is incredibly powerful.
Imagine if you were reading a Russian translation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the great problem. I don't trust translations at all.
Right.
But here you have an opportunity to hear it in the Russian and actually hear the language. Mm. I mean, I don't think I've ever experienced that.
Right. Mm. Well, it can be quite remarkable. I mean, if you've ever heard Joseph Brodsky read, for example.
Right, and then be able to look at it and then be able to switch over to the English and actually get it.
That's all possible, and it's portable. And it looks beautiful. That's the other thing. It looks beautiful. It's not more beautiful than the poem, but it's beautiful.
I just find it incredible, and I'll have to stand up for Colin because he's not here. But
the fact that
the younger generation is savoring that,
and
the older generation is
good. Oh, the younger! I talked to. I'm working with a younger woman in New York, 23 year old, who wants to take over Artist Proof in a few years, and she said. I met her in the Apple store, and now she works for JSTOR. She said she got so tired of the one dimensionality of this. I was in New York, and she invited me to an opening of a new journal that was produced by having a bunch of people sitting in a room typing it. I've heard that from other young. There's a young editor here, Molly Minturn Wolf, who talked about when she was doing an MFA, all these young poets sitting in a room, and somebody. You know, it was almost like there was a lector at the front and all these people sitting at their typewriters, and the lector would give them a prompt word or something, and then they'd type away. Well, yes, because we all started that way.
Yeah.
And so we still have the body knowledge of that, except you get creakier. But, don't forget Kafka. Kafka wrote letters about to one of his lovers about what it was like, the difference between composing on the page and composing with a typewriter.
Yeah.
So everybody goes through this, and then here's the caveboy spraying his orange paint on the wall,
and creating animated horses.
So
this is towards the end of the first part, and I was, you know, since I want to know about the origin of art, I of course want to know about the origin of dreaming. Like, why do we dream? Why do we dream? Clearly, there's an evolutionary advantage to dreaming. So what could it be? I don't know. But
gets us from here to there.
This boy has gone, you know, he's been hunting, and he's come back, and he's eaten dinner. And by the way, a lot of this images that came from the hunting was from the Michael Pollan book from The Omnivore's Dilemma, Chapter 3. It's some of the most incredible language. I wound up interviewing some of the hunters around where we live, like Ronnie, about what it's like to hunt, because I've never been hunting. I've been shopping, but I haven't been hunting. It's the same thing.
No, it's not.
It depends on where you are.
It's not. But anyway.
All right, so, and I was also interested about girls. You know, if risk for boys is to go into a cave, what is risk for a girl? And my answer is pregnancy is the risk for a girl. Only after the opening and disassembly of the dough, the handing out of the stout muscle of her heart, spongy lungs, sleek brown liver, the reeking gut. Can the boy release into hunger? He is ravenous. They pack their trophy out of the forest in a hum of flies and wasps, shadowed by buzzards. The guts they throw to the skulking dogs. He cracks hazelnuts in his teeth and chews as he walks. That night, flames flutter on hissing wood. He is licking his fingers over and over. Gratitude is hunger satisfied. When a girl crawls under his fur, he makes his hands soft to touch her. Crickets agitate the air. A big cat groans. And parents rise to scan the dark for eyes, to reach for their children, to hold them close to the body. The body is walled territory while it stands, while asleep, defenseless. To invade a body, seek out the apertures in the body wall, marked by the appetites. The boy explores, hungry to locate himself inside the furry moist, his sensory vents wide, making a map. He fingers woad inked creatures up the ridge of her spine, the dot circlets of her breasts, her clan mark striping her chin. And she arches her neck to him and shows him the signs. A girl's risk to put her body under siege, then await delivery, death's blade. To become a wall transected by the spasm of creation inside her. There was no mother pain for which she was not prepared, but now she's aware of its telling absence. The boy sleeps at the dawn of human dreaming, already self-aware. He rehearses the day's images on the cave of his skull in ochres, greens, and blues. He and the girl were sharing meat, she opening her mouth for him, red and glossy. Like the doe, she was his. Sparking fire glow gilded her shoulder and cheekbones. Her loose hair curled in a snaky nimbus, and she slithered under the skin. The fire flared. In his dream, the boy looked down to see the breathing doe curled at his feet like a dog. Dew cools his brow. His body's lax, helpless, but for his heart thudding, his chest rising and falling, in spite of himself and his restless eyes. A dog growls and woofs in its own dreams, twitching. In his dream is a story, its threads weaving above their sleeping heads, the hunter and the hunted. It was spring, the thawed ground moist and printable under a scrim of low plants. Late afternoon sun revealed its facts slantwise, tracks in a trail in which he was at pains to communicate. In the chatter of twig and leaf, the doe was telling him she's a doe, her rear tracks to the outside of the front ones, loping comfortably. He felt the muscles of her flank in his own loosed, hipped, eased, felt the flick of her up-cocked tail in the loft of his steps. The air streaming through his flared nostrils was the same air filling hers, a waterway riffling, murmuring pebbles, telling a new story. In his dream, the boy knew, it's easy. I was made for this. Wing-footed, sharp-sighted as the crow, croaking, mark and mark and mark. It was as if the trail sang to him, preparing him for the next mark. All was line and pattern, the linnets oscillating starts and stops above the swaying grasses, fern slipping the sinuous willow fringed with green blades, the horse's arched neck, the otter diving for river fish. Lines and points in motion. Then, a novelty along the way, a nipped stem, tufts of snagged winter fur, the odd thing in the path, the broken pattern catching his eye. Suddenly, he stopped. Seed-studded bear scat coiled at his feet. Alone, shivering, his dream-naked body raked with fear. Where were his knife and spear?
That's great.